Hello, Joe. What do you know? Welcome to the Bogart Film Affair.
That's right, baby.
What's all the fuss about?
Relax, Jack. Have another drink.
It smokes, it drinks, it philosophizes.
You mind telling me what it is I'm supposed to have done? At this rate, I'll be 60 before you get to the point.
All right. Time to be honest. How many times have you found yourself on a Friday night saying, I need a Bogart fix and I'm not sure which film to choose? Maybe I need a gangster film. No. Maybe I need Bogart fighting the Nazis in the war. No. Maybe I just need a good wry Bogart comedy. No. Give me something crazy. Give me something over the top. Give me something Dr. X worthy. You know what? Just give me Bogart walking into a nightclub, seeing the dame behind the microphone, and falling in love. You know what you need? You need the 1941 classic, All Through the Night. Okay, just listen for a second. Just take a deep breath. I'm going to read to you the very brief description I wrote about a year and a half ago on the Bogey Film Blog at bogeyfilmblog.wordpress.com. I know it sounds cheap when you leave the WordPress in, because what is it, like $30 a year to get rid of the WordPress and just be bogeyfilmblog.com? I get it. I'm poor, okay? I don't have the money, but we're beyond that. We are podcasting now, so just chill out. Take a deep breath. I try on the blog to keep the plots very succinct, very short. I'm not a fan of when you read a film review and the entire review is actually just an encapsulation of the film. If I want to know the plot of the film, I'll go to the film. I'll go. You don't have to tell me the entire plot point by point. Just tell me how it makes you feel. Tell me whether it's good or not. Okay, take a deep breath. This is the plot, the like one sentence encapsulation of All Through the Night. 1941. When a small-time gangster's favorite cheesecake baker is knocked off. Okay, we'll just stop. Just take a breather right at that point, because it gets a little wilder. It gets a little crazier. When a small-time gangster's favorite cheesecake baker is knocked off, it starts a chain of events that leads him and his crew on a wild ride around New York City, tracking down the killers and uncovering, a top-secret Nazi plot to blow up an American battleship. You got all that. We got gangsters. Okay, we have, and what sets a gangster off more than losing his favorite cheesecake baker? This isn't just a gang. This isn't your typical gangland baker gets murdered conspiracy. No, because the Nazis are behind this. And I want you to just think about that. The Nazis are in America killing cheesecake bakers. If that doesn't immediately incense you with so much anger, then you are not a patriotic American. And who, I ask you, can stand up to these cheesecake-murdering Nazis? Humphrey Bogart. And not just Humphrey Bogart, but an entire cast of ridiculous comedians posing as gangsters. Jackie Gleason, Phil Silvers, Frank McHugh is in there, because you can't have a good Bogart sidekick without Frank McHugh. Vaudevillian William Demarest with one of the greatest scenes. We'll get to it. All you need to know, listen, the Nazis are here. They're bumping off bakers. Humphrey Bogart is not going to stand for it. Okay, so here's where we're going to start. The director is a guy that I have grown to love incredibly. His name is Vincent Sherman. the great thing about Vincent Sherman is he was born in 1906 and lived until 2006. He was like a month shy or a little less than a month shy of his 100th birthday when he passed away, which means for the classic film fan, he was around long enough to do a lot of interviews. He even did the commentary on the All Through the Night DVD that I've got. He and Eric Lax, who wrote the great Bogart biography, both do commentary on All Through the Night. And I've never got a full sense of it from his interviews, but what made this guy so much fun is that he was able to inject just a ton of humor into these Bogart films that he worked on. He collaborated with Bogart five times, not always directly. He did a couple of screenplays. He did the screenplays for Crime School and King of the Underworld. King of the Underworld, there's a lot of Vincent Sherman humor in there, even though he didn't direct it. Crime School, not so much. Crime School's, you know, it was kind of a vehicle for the Dead End Boys, especially Billy Halep, trying to turn him into another young Bogart, I think. But then it gets good. Vincent Sherman is tasked with helping turn Bogart into a leading man. Now, depending on which interview you hear with Sherman, he flip-flops a little bit. In one interview, he says the studio came to him and said, you need to make Bogart a leading man. And in another one, I think on the commentary on the movie, he actually says, no, I saw leading man potential in Bogart, and they were not giving him the opportunity to capitalize on it, to get the girl in the film. So he wanted to help turn him into that. Now, their first real collaboration was The Return of Dr. X, which we'll get to on the podcast. Perhaps one of my all-time favorite discoveries after starting the blog. Campy horror spoof. Fantastic. We'll get to it. If he's trying to turn Bogart into a leading man, if he really felt that way, I don't know if that's where I would have started. But then we get to All Through the Night, where he spoofs gangster films. He has a lot of fun here. Vincent Sherman and Bogart, they apparently got along pretty well. There's reports that they respected each other. If you hear Vincent Sherman's interviews online, it sounds like he liked working with Bogart. He considered him very professional. He did say that Bogart groused a lot about the scripts, which is a word we don't hear enough anymore, groused. I'm going to try to use it in conversation this week sometime. Bogart groused a lot about the scripts, which I can understand because, in my opinion, Sherman was kind of pushing the envelope as far as parody and spoof went with some of these films. But what's fun to think about is the fact that Vincent Sherman was on both sides of Bogart's career. He was there at the beginning for these lower-level B pictures like King of the Underworld and The Return of Dr. X, but then he's on the other side with some of his more star-making vehicles, All Through the Night, and then he also helped direct the last couple scenes of Across the Pacific when that director had to step out. The other interesting thing to note is that another similarity between Sherman and Bogart came off screen. They were both pretty active battling the House Un-American Activities Committee, who was going around accusing everybody left and right in Hollywood of being a communist. Bogart and Bacall were pretty big in the protests, went to Washington, D.C., sat in on some meetings. Didn't end up going well for them. If you want the full story, you've got to read the Sperber-Lax Bogart biography, because he dives into this so deeply. I have a fully new appreciation for Bogart as an activist and for what the House Un-American Activities Committee was doing. Bogart and Bacall ended up kind of backing off some of the things that they'd said so that they wouldn't be severely punished. Sherman, not so lucky. He pushed it to the point where he eventually got blacklisted and had some trouble. All five of his collaborations with Bogart, whether it was the screenplays or directing him in the two films or even just taking the end of Across the Pacific and finishing it off, I'd recommend them all.
How good, how true, how kind.
Peter Lorre, fantastic in this film. Especially that opening scene he has where he's humming as he walks into the bakery. Just super chilling and fun. Playing Deep Breath. Pepe, the Nazi assassin who also moonlights as a piano accompanist at a nightclub. Yeah, it sounds crazy, but it's good. It's fantastic. I thought I had seen every great Peter Lorre Bogart collaboration, I was wrong. This was one of the outstanding films that I had missed somewhere along the line as I was collectively viewing Bogart's pictures throughout my life until I started the blog, and then I started with All Through the Night, which I'd heard next to nothing about, and here comes Peter Lorre playing this hilarious, amazing, bone-chilling role where he is the Nazi assassin on one hand, but at the same time playing nightclub songs with his future wife, Karen Verne, who plays Bogart's love interest in the film, Lita Hamilton. I can't say enough good things about Lorre here. This is truly his fantastic hidden role in a Bogart film. Not enough people talk about this one, play clips from this one. Another actor, Ludwig Stossel, who plays Miller the Baker, whose murder sets off the entire plot of Bogart chasing down the Nazis. This film's got so many classic Bogart collaborations, all the way from Barton MacLean, who plays a nightclub owner that doesn't get along real well with Bogart. He runs the nightclub where Peter Lorre and Karen Verne are moonlighting as they're also plotting with the Nazis. And now that I say that out loud, I realize how crazy that is. That if you're a Nazi trying to hide in Brooklyn, nightclub singer, piano player might not be, you know, the least conspicuous. You know, but then again, if you're going to hide in plain sight, that's pretty good. You know what? I'm going to give him a break there. That's a good disguise if you're a Nazi hiding in Brooklyn. So you got Karen Verne, who met Peter Lorre on this film. They eventually get married. You have Jane Darwell playing Bogart's mother, Mrs. Donahue. You have Conrad Veidt, who was an actor who had escaped from Germany when his life was threatened by the Nazis. He came to America and then ended up playing a lot of Nazis, ironically enough, because of the thick German accent, and he had kind of a commanding presence. It's also fun to note that this is about a year before Casablanca, and there are so many crossovers here between All Through the Night and Casablanca, including Bogart and Conrad Veidt and Peter Lorre. And even the Epstein brothers, who wrote Casablanca, did a touch-up on this script. And there's a lot of similar themes between this one and Casablanca. It'd make a good doubleheader for a Friday or Saturday night. Bogart's crew really needs to get highlighted here, because the casting department didn't go for your stock gangster villains. We have Frank McHugh as Barney, who is so good in this role, playing the newlywed gangster who can't get a honeymoon with his wife because he's too caught up in fighting the Nazis with Bogart. Hilarious. You've got Jackie Gleason in a very early Jackie Gleason role, playing one of Bogart's henchmen, Starchy. You've got Phil Silvers, who... Okay, so he joins in at the end of the film fighting the Nazis, even though he's not technically one of Bogart's crew. He's the waiter at the restaurant where he buys his cheesecake, but he's still there at the end fight. You got Phil Silvers in the film. Who cares what he's playing? Get him in the fight. It's very funny. He's I can't tell if he's nearsighted or incredibly farsighted, or possibly both. Whatever it is, his glasses don't work. So when he's in the battle at the end with the Nazis at their underground meeting, the only way he can figure out whether somebody's a Nazi or not is he gives them the old Sieg Heil, to which they respond, Sieg Heil, and then he smacks them on the head with a, I don't know, as a board or something, and throws them into a continuing pile of Nazis. And by the way, he's kind of hiding in the corner, and he's only cracking Nazis in the head after they've already been punched out by other characters. So it's not, you know, the bravest role in the film, but it's pretty good. You also have Wallace Ford as Spatz, not, you know, the biggest role in the film. He's probably the one of Bogart's crew that gets the least time to shine. But then you get the fantastic William Demarest. Now, let me tell you, if you have not seen this film yet, there is one scene that makes the entire thing worth it. Bogart and Demarest knock out two Nazis headed to the undercover Nazi meeting to plan the bombing of the battleship. And they assume the identities of the demolition men, the Nazis in charge of actually blowing up the boat. They think it's all going swell until they're called on to give a report on the demolitions. Now, here's where Demarest really shines. Supposedly picked for this role specifically because he had a vaudeville background and did this double talk routine, which he does here when they're asked to stand up in front of several hundred, you know, cutthroat Nazis and asked to explain themselves. If you don't take anything else out of this film, just go with this little life lesson that if you ever find yourself in an underground meeting of Nazis who are plotting to destroy the United States, and you get into trouble, just remember one good Sieg Heil can get you out of any bad situation.
My conduct.
Now we come to the important part. What is the Bogart factor here? On the film blog, I rate every Bogart film between 0 and 5 bogeys based on whether or not I got a really good bogey fix. This one gets 4. Not perfect, because, you know, not a perfect film, but Bogart is so much fun here. Playing a gangster, playing it for laughs, playing it for drama, playing it for action. He plays Gloves Donahue, apparently named or nicknamed because he likes to wear gloves. And one of the gloves is an integral part of the plot. He gets left behind at a murder. He gets framed. But listen, this is how much Gloves Donahue loves gloves. Even after he loses that one glove by the dead body, he continues to wear the other glove throughout the rest of the picture. Because he's Gloves Donahue, and that's what Gloves does. He wears gloves. Even if he only has one, he still wears that glove. Now the question is, what exactly does Gloves do? Is he a mobster? Kind of. I mean, he's described multiple ways throughout the film as a Broadway gambler, a Broadway racketeer, a Broadway big shot, a man of action. It all kind of boils down to small-time mobster, I think. You know, let's pretend there were no Nazis in this film, that this was just a day in the life of Gloves Donahue going about his daily business of wearing gloves. What else does he do? He orders cheesecake with his buddies. He swindles rich Texans out of their money, and he watches sports. That's about it. Now, you know, they clearly wanted to make sure that he didn't have too much edge. So not only does Bogart's crew not carry guns, but Bogart seems to prefer to use his fists before he uses a weapon. Now, that's not to say he won't use a gun, because he will. If he knocks a Nazi out and gets that pistol, he will use it. But for the most part, he's just using his fists here. He loves his mother, who is the first one to really alert him that there's been a murder, that his cheesecake baker. His cheesecake at his favorite restaurant isn't as good. He finds out that it's not from his regular cheesecake baker. His mother alerts him to the fact that the cheesecake baker is missing. He goes and finds the body. But there's not a whole lot of menace here. The menace is really saved for Peter Lorre. So what we see is a gangster, a mobster, a racketeer. We see a Bogart who loves his mom and treats his crew like they're little brothers more than gangsters. It makes for a pretty lovable, likable criminal overall. I gotta give this one a must-see if you're a Bogart fan. He and Vincent Sherman just work perfectly together. And don't forget, of course, this is the film that gave us the great line, "Hello, Joe, what do you know?" as Bogart walks into a nightclub and one of the manager's henchmen comes up to him. His name is Joe, and Bogart just kind of offhandedly throws that in. You can't go wrong. You get a classic line out of Bogart in one film. That makes the whole film worth it, regardless of how good or bad it might be. Not only that, but you get another classic moment. Pre-Casablanca, pre-To Have and Have Not, you get that scene in the nightclub where Karen Verne is singing with Pepe, the pianist accompanying her, and Bogart walks in to the nightclub, and it's one of those early roles where we get that classic moment of Bogart seeing and hearing a beautiful woman singing in a nightclub. Has there ever been an actor who can make listening to live music look more captivating and cool than Bogart? Seeing him casually walk to a table, never taking his eyes off of Verne, is a scene replayed many times throughout his filmography with different leading actresses. Only Bogart could pull it off with such a sparkly-eyed charisma, and it never grows old.
Shut up, Sugar.
So what's the bottom line here? 4 bogeys out of 5 for your Bogart fix. Fantastic film. Vincent Sherman, great director who was great at inserting a lot of comedy into his films. All Through the Night, 1941, Peter Lorre, Karen Verne, Barton MacLean, Frank McHugh, Jackie Gleason, William Demarest, and Humphrey Bogart. So I thought it would be fun on every podcast to throw out a question to the Twitter universe about Bogart or his career or what, you know, whatever strikes my fancy that week. I've been a little obsessed lately with the radio version of The African Queen, starring Humphrey Bogart and Greer Garson. So jumping off that film a little bit, I posed the question, is there a role that Bogart should have won an Oscar for before The African Queen? And I got a few pretty good responses on Twitter. Damian Barcroft, he's a writer, at Mr. DM Barcroft, B-A-R-C-R-O-F-T, kind of a fun writer. He just did an article, I don't know when this podcast is going to come out. He just did an article on the new Bogart's Gin that the Bogart Estate and an alcohol distillery are putting out here towards the end of the year. It's a good read. Find him on Twitter. He answered, what a question, so many. The Maltese Falcon, reimagining the Private Dick persona so effortlessly cool and instantly iconic. Casablanca, Do I Need a Reason, and Treasure of the Sierra Madre, stunning performance, and true wit and menace in equal measure. Then we have Tim Rosenberger, at Cinema Pack Rat on Twitter. Okay, now here's the thing. When I asked the question, I didn't just say which film, I also said, and why, Tim. So, you know, my college world religions professor, Dr. Delmonico, would have said, Tim, you only answered the first part of the question. I can only give you partial credit. But he said, Hi, Sierra. I'm not going to even mention that he might have had a spelling error in there as well. You know, we're looking at a solid C on this essay question, Tim. But still, I totally agree. Hi, Sierra. Fantastic film. The Optimist / Contrarian at PGH _ guy on Twitter. In a Lonely Place is Bogart's finest film. Finest? I don't know. But I'm going to say that would have been my answer. In a Lonely Place, Bogart gives an incredibly rounded performance. A lot of similarities to the Caine Mutiny characters there. Just a little bit of insanity constantly boiling under his performance. Gary at Big Race King on Twitter answered Treasure of the Sierra Madre again. Doesn't give me the why. Maybe because there's only 140 characters you can use. Jose Morphy at Nabo, N-A-B-O, Kane on Twitter, C-A-N-E, said, Hi, Sierra, Casablanca, Key Largo, and then 1954 tweets, at 1954 tweets, has anyone suggested Hi, Sierra? Yes, they have, but still a fantastic answer. Again, I got to go with In a Lonely Place. Not that there's anything wrong with the Maltese Falcon, or The Big Sleep, or Casablanca, or Hi, Sierra. You've just named some of his biggest, most iconic roles, but there's so much nuance in the film In a Lonely Place that's got to be the one I'm going to end with. And that's going to wrap up the Bogart Film Affair for this week. It's the first one. It's my first effort. It's the first try into the podcasting world. I don't know how the audio is going to be. I've never uploaded iTunes before. We're going to see how this works. I've heard lots of different things about how to do this. I found lots of different articles. I've heard, for instance, you have to have at least 3 podcasts ready to go before you can upload to iTunes or won't show you. I don't know if that's true or not. I'm not going to risk it. I'm going to have 3 ready to go. And that way, there'll be 3 dumped out right away for you. I don't know if this is going to be weekly. More than likely, it's not. Because this, you know, it's real late at night. I just got done with work. I work 2 jobs. 1, I travel a bunch. 1 is a lot of nights. This might be a twice a month, maybe, or maybe every other week with the blog. There'll be a blog post, then there'll be a podcast. I'm not sure. But I would love, love, love to hear your responses. I am at Bogey Film Blog on Twitter. I am bogeyfilmblog at gmail.com. So you can find me either one of those places, or, as I said earlier in the podcast, bogeyfilmblog.wordpress.com. Thanks a lot. I hope you have a fantastic week.
Oh, this is the end.